You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, now available on iTunes. Hit the subscribe button and never miss an episode. We are also available on Audio Boom and Mixcloud, while Android users can find us on Pocket Casts and Podcast Republic. Enjoy the show and thanks for listening.
You're all very welcome to episode 18 of the Between the Stripes LOI podcast. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm very sorry to say tonight is the final episode of the season. It's been an absolute pleasure bringing this show to you each and every week, but it has to come to an end at some stage, and the 2017 season end for us tonight, John.
Yeah, it's a shame that it has to end. I mean, last week we had record listeners, which was fantastic, but we have got a belter of a show lined up, Kieran.
Yeah, as you said there, we smashed records last week, over 900 listeners. We're absolutely stunned by that, so thanks to everyone that tuned in, and thanks to everyone that sent really positive feedback on social media during the week as well. But if you thought that was a league-winning lineup last week, folks, this lineup tonight can only be described as double winners, in my opinion. So on the show tonight, we have Stephen O'Donnell, the Dundalk captain. He's going to speak to us ahead of that massive showdown at the Aviva on Sunday. We speak to Alan Cawley from Soccer Republic, former Dundalk man as well also. He's going to give us his analysis on the final. We speak to Declan Fabio O'Brien, another man from RTE. He's going to give us his views, and we'll speak to him about Drogheda also. Breaking away from the FAI Cup team of the night, we speak to Stephen Henderson, a man extremely passionate at the moment about the structure for the league next season, and we had a very good debate on how he feels the league should be structured next year, so keep an ear out for that. We speak to a man who had a foot in both camps, Dundalk and Cork, a former player for both sides. It's, of course, the current Longford Town manager, Neil Fenn, so we'll get his views ahead of Sunday's final. And we also speak to the Opal jersey from Twitter. He's a Cork City diehard, and he's going to give us the fans' perspective for the final, but strap up, folks. It's episode 18. Here we go, the final show of the season. Thanks for listening. So we'll get to the FAI Cup final shortly, John, but only one place to start tonight, and that is the results from the final round of the League of Ireland. We labelled it Decision Day on last week's show, and it was Judgment Day for Galway United, who sadly fell down into the First Division despite a brave effort at Eamon DC Park, and that's where we'll start, John.
Yeah, well, it was a cracking game at a packed-out Eamon DC Park. Galway had to win this one, Kieran, to give themselves any chance of staying up and hope results went in the favour elsewhere. Very exciting game. McCormack got free early on, Gary Rogers making a good save from him, but from the resultant corner, Galway actually took the lead 1-0. A man, a once-away defender, we can call him that, Nicholas Vemland, he equalised from a ball cross in. It was almost carbon copy of the first Galway goal.
And Conor Wynn extremely unlucky on that goal, I have to say. John made a great effort with his initial save and then tried to claw it away, but the long legs of the Dane was just too good, and he got the ball in the back of the net to equalise.
Exactly. Wynn's been criticised a lot in the past by you, but I thought he had a good game, Kieran. A McElhaney special, how many times have we said that this season? That was tipped over. Again, a great save from Conor Wynn there. But Galway's heart sunk when Jamie McGrath scored from a lovely move, actually.
Team goal, John.
Yeah, Dane Massey pulled it back. McGrath converted 2-1 to Dundalk. And they must have thought that it was all over when another stunning goal from that man, McElhaney. 3-1, a superb chip, Kieran.
His first touch, and he admitted himself when I was watching the game live, John, I said, oh, the chance is gone, first touch was poor, and he admitted as much in his post-match interview that the reason he did chip it was because his first touch took him away from the goals, and it was really the only way he was going to score. But I don't think there's too many players in the league who could have finished like that. That was absolutely amazing from McElhaney.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to put him in the shop window yet again. You know, I mean, I don't know how many windows he can go in with the amount of superb goals he scored this season, but fantastic stuff from him. Look, Galway, to be fair, they're scrapping for their lives. They came back into it. Great run and goal by Rory Hale, who was spoken about very highly by Julian Kenny last week.
Yeah, a man who's going to be in demand, just like Patrick McElhaney, I imagine. And there's a few Lincoln Hale, even to Dundalk, possibly. So, be interesting to see what happens there.
They nearly equalised when they hit the post from a Cunningham header. But a bad mistake from that Danish defender, Nicholas Vemland, let Ronan Murray in again. And that made it 3-3. Galway knew they'd only needed one more goal than that, and they could have been in with a lifeline, but unfortunately a counter-attack from Dundalk right at the end, Scott. So Duffy scored from across.
Mistake from Horgan for that one, trying to keep the ball alive. I think he didn't want to give away a corner or a throw-in and run the clock down in those last few minutes, and he tried to backheel the ball out to a Galway teammate. Unfortunately, he ended up cushing it straight into the pass of Duffy, and for me, it summed up Galway's season. Extremely good going forward. attractive to watch, but defensively frail, and that's what's cost Shane Keegan back-to-back relegations. Of course, he went down with Wexford last year, John.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Two relegations in two seasons. I wonder whether that's his Galway career ended.
Well, he's been speaking today in the press, John, and he's admitted that he's uncertain on his Galway future. He doesn't know what way the club will take, what their next step forward will be. He's hopefully can stay there and try and keep as many of those players he has at his disposal at the moment and bounce straight back up. But he also admitted that he's very likely to lose at least six or seven players. Yeah. You're looking at the likes of Murray, Hale, Houlihan, who was suspended on Friday night and was a huge loss to Galway. So it's going to be extremely difficult no matter what step Galway take next. And of course, before the game, news came out, an email sent by Galway United season ticket holders asking that if they could in any way possible leave their season tickets behind them for the night and pay in. Finances seem to have dried up at Galway, which is very worrying news. So it's going to be difficult next season for Galway down in the First Division, John.
It is indeed. Anyway, moving on. Pats went to Derry knowing that they had to get a point to stay up, and that's exactly what they did. Kieran 1-1 that finished. Patterson's early shot was saved by Scowron. Brennan made it 1-0. And then
a good breakaway goal there, John, I must say.
It was, yeah.
And Brennan started the move and finished it. And as we spoke about on last week's show, he's been one of the main men there for Pat since he came back into the club. A great signing from Liam Buckley. And it looks like that it could be that goal that secured Pat's safety this season.
Yeah, before the equaliser, McAniff's shot went close, and then it forced a great save actually from the keeper there. And Rory Patterson equalised, a neat turn and shot, Kieran, 1-1. Late on, Schubert forced Scourer into a good low down save and an amazing block at the end, keeping Pats in the game from Billy Dennehy.
Ran the length of the pitch to make that block.
Oh, unbelievable.
He's taken a lot of stick from not just Pats fans but League of Ireland fans in general over the last couple of years. As I said on last week's show, we haven't seen consistent form from Billy Dennehy since his Shamrock Rovers days, and even then he could drop a poor performance here and there. But he's really stepped it up in the last few weeks. We've seen his contribution against Cork in the recent home game, and then up in Buncrana, crucial game for Pats. He really stepped it up, and I imagine he'll be a key part of that team again next year.
Look, and it just shows it's fine lines. If that had gone in, and it'd have been a Galway goal instead of that goal from Duffy for Dundalk, it'd have been a different story on deadline day.
And one man who was involved in that game on Friday night at DC Park, John, was of course the captain of Dundalk Football Club, Stephen O'Donnell. Who can add some more silverware to his incredible resume this Sunday with a win over arch rivals Cork City. And I spoke to him earlier this week. This is the interview. Enjoy it, folks. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to say we're joined now by a man who can only be described as probably our most trophy-laden guest ever here on the podcast. 5 League of Ireland titles, 2 FEI Cups, 1 Setanta Cup, 2 League Cups, and twice in the PFEI Team of the Year. And, of course, the opportunity this weekend to add yet another FEI Cup to that tally. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen O'Donnell. Stephen, thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So, Stephen, I suppose I have to start off by asking you, when you hear that record read out loud, you must pinch yourself at times. It must be still a bit of a dream to have won so much in your career.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose when you're young and when you break into first team football, what you want to do next is win plenty of trophies and that. So I was lucky enough that when I came back to Ireland to get my hands on a good bit of silverware. But I've been fortunate enough to play in good teams, and a lot of it has been in the right place in the right time. So I suppose probably the biggest achievements would probably be getting two different sort of Irish teams being in the Europa League, because it's something that had never been done before. So, I know you don't get silverware for either of those things, but still, they're probably the two biggest achievements. So, something when I stop playing that you look back on fondly, definitely.
So we'll go back to Friday night, Stephen. I think it's fair to say it maybe wasn't Dundalk's most vintage performance. Obviously a tough game against a Galway side who are fighting for their lives. I'd imagine defensively you'd be looking to improve if you're going to turn over Cork City at the weekend.
Yeah, I think that goes without saying. We'll definitely have to anyway. But to be fair to Galway, their second half of the season form has actually been very good. And, I think there's definitely some worse teams that are staying up than Galway, especially in the second half of the season, and they have good players that can, if you do switch off with that defensively, or if you are a bit loose, they have good attacking players that can exploit you. So, as you said, we'll be looking to tighten up a lot, but it was good to get a victory going into the cup final, and I'm sure it was a very entertaining game for the neutrals watching RT, with 7 goals going in and plenty of chances. So you know, but we're under no illusions. We'll definitely have to tighten up all over the pitch to get a result next Sunday.
Yeah, very much so, Stephen. And I'm sure the neutrals will be hoping for something similar this Sunday. Maybe not yourself, though. It wouldn't be good for the heart rate. But just on to Cork City themselves. Five games without a win in the head-to-head stakes against Cork. Why do you think Dundalk have struggled in the recent head-to-head meetings with Cork?
Yeah, it's not a good record for ourselves. You know, I think sort of, as I say, in boxing styles make fights, and I think Cork are sort of suited to sitting in against us and, you know, catch us on the counter. I think we mostly have dominated kind of possession and that, and it suits their sort of style of playing that they sit in and be sort of pragmatic and then try and catch us on the counter when we maybe turn over the ball. So something we'll have to look at, and that's going into the week this week. You know, it's just the way it's been, you know, but we have a bit of solace in the last real, in the, I suppose, couple of real sort of do-or-die head-to-headers we've got over the line against them over the last few years. I know they beat us in the cup final last year, but I don't think we had a great preparation going into it, obviously, playing away in Zenit St. Petersburg on Thursday night. So, you know, there'll be no excuses this weekend, and, you know, a fine big pitch like the Aviva should be the best team we win on the day. But, you know, it's definitely be something we have to look at, in the sense of, you know, the last few times that we've played, they've had the Indian sign over us, albeit we drew with them the last game down at Turner's Cross, but still probably didn't play it to the best of our ability. But we got a draw, and hopefully we come out on the right side of it.
Yeah, I just want to ask you on that most recent meeting, Stephen, down in Turner's Cross, of course, the 1-1 draw with Robbie Benson getting a late goal. For me, it was an extremely heated meeting. It was something we haven't seen in the rivalry. It's obviously been a rivalry that's been growing game by game and year on year, with both sides competing for trophies and league titles. Do you feel there's a danger that Sunday's final could maybe spill over, or will Stephen Kenny be stressing the importance of imposing your style of football on Cork City?
No, like, we never go into a game worried about the opposition or trying to ruffle their feathers. You know, very rarely you see kind of us spilling over in the sense of getting men sent off and that. There's always going to be a bit of needle in it, in the sense of we've been the two most dominant teams the last few years. We've been first and second in the league the last few years, and this will be the third cup final. So there is a bit of needle in that regard, but I suppose it's more sort of bragging rights about on the football pitch, in the sense of getting one over each other on the football pitch and results, rather than the game's been real bruising physical encounters. I don't think any of our games have been ultra dirty, and I don't think there are many kind of dirty players on the pitch in that sense. You know, there are not really many hard men from both sides on the pitch. We can take care of ourselves all right, but there's not lads that are going around trying to injure each other or that. So in that sense, I think it's just more of a rivalry of getting one up on each other results-wise and football-wise, more so than it being worried that it'll boil over physically-wise or sort of in tempers flaring. So I don't think that's going to be an issue on Sunday.
Speaking of rustling feathers, Stephen, I'm sure you've seen the video of Mark McNulty enjoying himself at the weekend. Will that be an extra motivation for Dundalk?
No, we won't need extra. You don't need extra motivation going into the cup finals and that. You know, it's up to everyone else's prerogative or whatever way they want to celebrate winning leagues or winning whatever, you know. But it's nothing really got to do with us. We won't need any sort of extra motivation then. What's in front of us is kind of maybe it probably might define our season, in the sense if we win the two cups and come second in the league, it'll be classed as a good season. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you let another team win the double and you only come away at the League Cup, you know, it would have to go down as maybe a little bit of a disappointing season. So, you know, what's in store for us is that. So there's a lot at stake on Sunday in that case for us, either, I suppose, a very good season or an average season. So we won't need any extra motivation, you know, to get us up for the match on Sunday.
Yeah, it's certainly been a good second half to season for Dundalk, Stephen. After that 3-0 defeat against Cork, you've won 19 of your last 24 in all competitions. That's including penalty shootout and extra times as wins. Whereas Cork, they only won one of their last six Premier Division games. So I'd imagine you're extremely confident at the moment.
Yeah, we're in good form now. You know, I think it was always going to take time for us to sort of get going. We had not much of a break. You know, we were going till mid-December last year playing in Europe, and we didn't have much of a break at all. And then obviously you lose three of your better players on the off-season, and we bring in like the most signings we've brought in the last few years. You know, there's always going to be struggle for that continuity and that sort of rhythm, you know, in the first half of the season. And Cork, to be fair to them, went on a great run and sort of got away from our grasp like far too far. So second half of the season, you know, it's really picked up and it's been more like the Dundalk teams of old, you know, sort of like blowing teams away at O'Reill and that. And the boys, everyone's got used to the style of play, all the new boys, and even the boys that were there last year have got up to speed with it all, you know, and sort of found their legs again for the second half of the season. So, you know, that can only be positive going into Sunday. So we're definitely going in a confident mood, and you know, we're in decent form at the minute.
Yeah, and just on yourself personally, Stephen, for me, you were the standout player in the two semi-final games against Shamrock Rovers. You had a little spell of injuries this year and in recent years, but always a key player in that Dundalk team. I'd imagine you're feeling very fit yourself at the moment at this stage of the season.
Yeah, touch wood. I've had a good run this season, you know, but I'm always confident enough if I get a few weeks training and a few games together that I'll be able to do all right come when the games come around. So probably last month or two has been the first time that I've been able to get sort of consecutive training sessions together and that. So hopefully that'll continue this week and that, and we'll have a fully fit squad to sort of choose from. And whatever way the manager goes with it or whatever team he wants to pick on Sunday, that everyone will be raring to go and chomping at the bit. But yeah, personally, I suppose it's probably the best little bit of form I've been in now for the whole season, but it's probably the first time I've been injury free and training regularly also. So hopefully that continues for me and for the whole team. And as I said, the manager has a fully fit squad to go with, and then he'll pick his team that he feels right, and everyone in the squad and on the bench will be raring to go.
Yeah, so that just leads me into my final two questions, Stephen. I'd imagine the hunger within this group, as you said, to complete the Cup double, and not only that, to stop your major rivals succeeding in what would be a double of their own, is a huge motivation factor for this final. And just on the group itself, there's a lot of speculation at the moment. I'm sure you're not thinking about that, but how important is it for Dundalk to keep this group of players together?
Yeah, it is. It's the sort of downfall of the League of Ireland. You know, if you do well here in Europe, or players really do well domestically, you know, they're at the clutches of teams from abroad. You know, that's the way it's been all the season. We've already lost a good few players to going abroad to England, of our best players. So this year is going to be no different. So it's frustrating in that sense. It's very hard to build year on year and keep your best players and really build your squad and strengthen your squad year on year. Because if your players are doing their stuff and doing very well, they're going to get moves. And this year looks like it's going to be kind of no different. So you know, that's the frustrating aspect of the League of Ireland. But something you have to deal with. We've dealt with it pretty well over the last few years, and you know, in an ideal world, you'd like to keep all your best players again this season. So we'll see what happens. You know, you never know what could happen with players. You know, a lot can happen in 24 hours, so it's very hard to predict. But obviously, in an ideal world, the manager would like to keep all the best players and the players he wants to keep and be able to build on it again for next season. So hopefully that'll be the case.
Stephen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm sure it's a big week up in Dundalk, so we really do appreciate you taking the time out. Very best of luck on Sunday, and hopefully we'll speak to you again after.
Lovely, thanks a million, thanks for having me, thank you.
Cheers, Stephen. Well, John, decision day certainly went in the favour of Sligo Rovers. They couldn't get the win over Drogheda, and in fact it was their third draw against the Drogs this season, but it was enough to keep Gerard Litton's side up in the Premier Division for next season.
Yeah, like you say, Kieran, Sligo went into that match knowing that a point would be enough to win it, and there would be heavy favourites against Drogheda. And indeed, Sligo should have taken the lead early on when Morehouse should have scored from a lovely cross from the man that's made such a difference this season, Rhys McCabe. Vinnie Fahati also had a header cleared off the line. But to be honest, it was only kept 0-0 with a great save from McGuinness near the end from a Russell header. That kept it 0-0.
Yeah, the man we spoke about with Chris Bennion last week, Stephen McGuinness, he's been one of the top performing young keepers in the Premier Division this season, and I imagine he will be a man in demand. But speaking of former Drogheda men, we're going to speak to Declan Fabio O'Brien now. We're going to speak about his analysis during the week on Soccer Republic and, of course, Sunday's Cup Final. So enjoy it, folks. So our second Soccer Republic analyst of the night joins us. It's Declan Fabio O'Brien, former Drogheda man. Declan, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks, Vinnie, Kieran. Thanks for having me.
So obviously we'll speak about the Cup Final shortly, Fabio, but just want to start, you're obviously on Soccer Republic this week, so you had a few things to say, so we'll pick up on a few comments you came out with. I take it you weren't too impressed with the defending by Galway on Friday night.
No, I think a you know, I've been a fan of Galway's endeavours all season as regards attacking style of football and, you know, flair, entertainment, all the stuff that we want to see in the league. But, you know, I just feel that he was too forward thinking in his tactics, and, you know, he didn't really have a plan B, I suppose, Shane. And, you know, you see games where he got themselves ahead, got themselves back into games, and he still persevered with attack, and, you know, more times than not, you look at the teams that do well in any league throughout Europe, throughout the world, defence has to be, you know, fairly mean, and I just felt they were far too open.
Yeah, and Shane Keegan, he's been praised for the attacking style of football all across the media, and I've seen a couple of people take an issue with that today, saying that he was receiving too much praise for a manager that had just seen his side relegated. That's why I want to ask you, his predecessor Tommy Dunn was a man who, the total opposite, he was attacked for uninspiring football, but he kept Galway up with games to spare, but he was still dismissed from his role, whereas Shane Keegan, good football, but they've gone down. So do you feel that was the wrong decision from Galway?
Well, it is now. Yeah. You know, I think the board there obviously said, look, well, people aren't coming to watch the games probably because of the style of football. So you're caught a little bit, and I can understand a little bit sympathetic in that sense. We need to get people to the League of Ireland grounds. You know, we don't have lovely grounds and family atmospheres, you know, to you know, complement the games. So, you know, the football has to be good. And maybe Shane, I don't know Shane personally, maybe he's saying, listen, I need the games to be entertaining. I want people to keep coming back to watch us. I want us to be a team that really entertain. And as I said, it depends on the brief, I suppose, that he was given from the board and what they're looking for. And, you know, only they know if they're happy with him. And I suppose time will tell on that one. But as a football analyst and a fan of football in the League of Ireland, you'd have to say, you know, there's times where they could have got a lot more points on the board if he had have, you know, even, you know, slightly tweak them tactically, you know.
That leads me into a two-pronged question, Declan. Do you think the Galway board would have made that decision if they had known beforehand that three teams would go down this season? And just on the three teams going down, it obviously brought great excitement to the league this season. But is it putting clubs like Galway in financial jeopardy? Is it a dangerous move from the FAI? Obviously, we're going to revert to two 10-team leagues next season, but could this leave long-lasting damage?
Yeah, I think it's a very precarious position now. It leaves teams in, and it, you know, it's always going to be very difficult for them teams. And with the three teams going down, you would like to think that the board did have that, you know, after making the decision, they might have regretted it slightly. But look, Shane, you know, he did what he did, and he stuck to his beliefs on it for the whole season. And that's one thing you would say he did. He tried to really play that style that. You know, all attack out style of football, and, you know, he stuck to his principles on it, but unfortunately it didn't work out for him, and it's, you know, it does leave Galway now, you know, financially, and a lot of clubs, like Drogheda, the same, and, you know, these clubs will, you know, in the wilderness again, and you don't know how they're going to survive next year because of the three teams going down, which is a very ruthless, you know, scenario for teams. But sure, we knew that at the start of the year what was happening.
Yeah, and I think from my point of view, it was, you know, the part-time clubs, they really suffered as a result towards the end of the season. We saw Finn Harps take a real nosedive, and it just shows to me the difference between full-time training and part-time, the way the league finished this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you'll be looking to see a part-time team next year, the way things are going. It's what we're looking for is, you know, teams to really get their houses in order. You know, you got the FAI, obviously, that need to drive this as well as regards the strategic plans that are in place in the clubs. But in my opinion, we need to drive this even further as regards. We need to appoint certain people from the FAI to maybe go into these clubs and not just on an advisory role, but to actually implement them and, you know, be in the clubs as regards for, you know, a couple of months and make sure these plans are followed to the T, you know.
Maybe I've been slightly harsh with these comments, Fabio, but you didn't seem overly impressed either with Sligo's new manager, Ger Little, or Limerick's Neil McDonald, the job they've done since they came in. Sligo, you know, Ger Little came in, he inherited a real mess, I have to say, from Dave Robertson. The recruitment was absolutely dreadful. Neil McDonald, on the other hand, when Martin Russell was sacked, they were only 4 points off European football, if I remember correctly at the time. Right. And now they slipped down into a real rut and did well to stay up in the end. But so many talented players in that Limerick side. You think of Ogbeni and Tosi. So just maybe if you could go a little bit deeper into your analysis on Ger Little and then Neil McDonald.
Well, you know, the thing is with Ger Little, I think you're right in saying that. It would be a little bit harsh to say, you know, Ger, you know, he hasn't really made an impact. He hasn't set the world alight, is what I said, and I don't think he has. But, you know, he steadied the ship, and I think that's a compliment in itself. You know, he did get a mess there. He's, you know, he's cleaning up a mess. That takes a couple of months to put your own stamp on it. It takes another couple of months. So, you know, his philosophies of football and everything else will be determined in the next pre-season and the next couple of sports few months into the next season. So, you know, time will tell. I didn't know too much about Ger until he came into the league. So, as I said, he deserves it. But with Neil, you're right in saying he's got a great bunch of players in there in Limerick. I think he possibly should have done better with them at times. They were competitive all the time. You know, not far off getting a decent result here. There's, you know, if they had got to the FEI final, I think that would have been a massive achievement for them. But it wasn't to be. He got a lucky draw away to Cork. So I think the improvements he's made, McDonald have been, you know, few and far between. I'm not sure if he's the man for the job down there. I think, in my own opinion, I think they probably would have been better off staying with Russell and, you know, riding that out a little bit longer. But, you know, obviously he made the decision, and we will see what happens on that one.
Now, while myself and John are far from biased, we did take some offence to the suggestion the Shamrock Rovers need a new striker. We feel Gary Shaw is doing quite a good job up there at the moment, Declan.
I know he's a massive the Gary Shaw fan club down there, so I do think he's a real, real good player as regards work rate. You know, he's the kind of guy you want in the squad, but for a top team like Dundalk, Cork, Shamrock Rovers, who want to be one of them top teams, you've got to have a player that has a little bit more guile, a little bit more, I suppose, cleverness, a little bit more around the box. And I just think he doesn't have enough to his game. You know, even McMillan, who in the last couple of years has improved so much into a real, you know, all-rounded number nine. And I think Gary Shaw is miles off that, in my opinion. I think he's very, very decent. But I think if you're looking for a striker for Sligo or the likes of, you know, 6, 7, 8, he's our man for that type of job, but not for the top teams.
I'm a bit surprised with that, Declan, because I mean he's come on leaps and bounds from when he was at Longford, and he's been linked with a move to Scotland as well.
Yeah, no, I've watched him regularly. I just think, you know, from what I see, you know, his all round game, he wouldn't have the best touch. He wouldn't have, you know, wouldn't be overly quick, decent in the air. He's a good foil for a really top striker, I think, definitely. But I just think on his own as a number nine, I think, you know, he makes decent runs, and he's a decent striker. I don't want to sound too harsh here, but I just don't think he's at the level for a team going to try and win leagues.
Well, before we start an argument, Declan, we'll move on to the cup final on Sunday. So obviously the third year in a row that Cork and Dundalk will meet. How do you see it going?
Well, traditionally, you know, they're always tight, and you know, this is probably where I'm going to go against it. I think Dundalk, if they get their noses in front and their big players show up, I think they could win comfortably in this game, actually. Yeah. I think for the first time, I think if Benson comes out to play and McElhenney, which I think they will, I think they'll score first, and I think they could win 2 or 3-0 for me. I think they've been in form for so long. I think Cork are, you know, fairly ordinary of late, still a strong team, don't get me wrong, but I just think Dundalk will have the edge and the match winners on the day.
Yeah, well, I'll obviously be accused of bias, but I actually went online today and placed a 3-0 bet on Dundalk, and the reason for that, I feel, and I'd love to get your views on this, Declan, Dundalk, the team almost picks itself. I think the really only issue for Stephen Kenny will be whether Chris Shields is fit enough to play, and if not, I'd imagine it'd be O'Donnell and Benson in midfield, which for me is a great partnership, because O'Donnell can sit but can push on at the same time, and obviously Benson, we've seen the goals he can score, whereas Cork yeah. have so many other selection issues, and obviously the whole thing going on with Carl Shepherd at the moment, whether he's going to play or not, so there just seems to be more decisions for John Caulfield to make.
I 100% agree with you on all of that, and be similar thinking to myself. I think this Dundalk team you know, they're a well-oiled machine at this stage. Going into this game now, it's like an ordinary game. Not that Cork, you know, would be phased by it either. They've been plenty of big games over the last few years, but I just think the amount of European games they played. I felt last year in the final, I think fatigue played a massive factor in the Dundalk's game. They had so many games last year, and I just think it was, you know, they didn't have that spark on the day, even though they were the better side, I felt as well. And you take as well that Cork City had, you know, a star match winner in their team in Maguire, and he didn't have a good game whatsoever on the day, but it only takes, you know, a half a yard for him to get a goal, and which proves right before the penalty shootout. But I'd be the same. I just think, you know, all over, you look all over, defensively they're both two good outfits, but I just feel from the midfield, I think Dundalk will have just too many goal threats. Duffy as well, he's in form as well. You've got goals from even our centre half. Scarlett is a real threat. So, as I said, I see them getting the nose in front early, and I don't see them stopping after that.
Yeah, and obviously you won't have heard it yet, but we spoke to Stephen O'Donnell earlier on for the show, and he admitted as much that the preparation for last year's final was just totally not right. Obviously coming back from Zenit, and it had a huge effect, whereas this time they have the whole week to take it all in and get themselves right. So I'm hoping it's going to be a much better game than we've seen in the last 2 years. It's been very cagey, very tight, but with Cork being the champions, and obviously Dundalk already having a cup success under their belt this year, hopefully it'll be a much more open game. But Declan, we want to thank you very much for joining us again on the show, and best of luck going forward with everything you're doing in the media at the moment.
Thanks, man. Always a pleasure, lads. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Fabio.
Thanks, Declan.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So great to get the views of Declan Fabio O'Brien there, John. But moving on, Keith Long is a man who's receiving a lot of plaudits this week, surely a manager of the year contender, and his Bohemian side rounded off a fine season by beating already relegated Finn Harps by 3-1 at Dalymount Park.
Yeah, and that ensured that Bohs finished fifth this season, Kieran, which is, you know, it's a fabulous fabulous result for them, and I think they've got the ambition to do better as well next season. So
yeah, I think we've spoke about it already, that for Bohs to push on next season and in the coming years, it's going to be about squad retention as much as it is about bringing in players. Obviously the two men that are going to be in high demand would be Akinade and Corcoran, but I'm sure Keith Long will do everything in his power to keep them two at Dalymount Park next season.
Well, absolutely. Well, Corcoran, it was at the start that missed a great chance early on, but it was ex-Longford Town man Philly Gannon that opened the score in Kieran at 1-0. Bohs got a penalty then, and Diddy Corcoran hit the post there. But it was the other striker, Akinade, that made it 2-0 from a penned across there. Jamie Hamilton made it 3-0 with his first goal for the clubs. Harps consolation from a corner, and as we said, both finished fifth there.
Yeah, so moving on, John, to Bohemians' arch rival Shamrock Rovers. They had a 2-1 win at the Talis Stadium over Limerick.
Yeah, exactly. Henry Cameron should have opened the score in there for Limerick, but he took too long over his chance, maybe showing a bit of an experience there. Fitzgerald as well shot straight at the keeper when maybe it was easier to score as well, but it was Rovers that went into the lead, a penalty from Brandon Mealy to make it 1-0. Chances to make two. Boyd shot straight at Hall, but it was 2-0 with a great run from Ronan Finn and shot that beat Hall, who was probably not in the best of positions, Kieran, and that made it 2-0. Hall made amends by a good save from Connolly, but Limerick gave themselves hope late on with Colin Walsh or Lachlan. He pulled one back to make it 2-1, and that's how the match finished.
Yeah, a big thing in this game was the young players that were blooded by Neil MacDonald. And reading in the press today, it looks like he wants to make those young players a key part of his squad next season. Carlos Sullivan, Cullen Walsh, O'Loughlin, Alan Murphy and William Fitzgerald all starred in that game in the Talis Stadium, and they've all signed contracts for next season with Limerick. Just in other squad news, down at Marketsfields, League of Ireland veteran John O'Flynn, he has been released by the club, as has Stephen Kenny, which is a surprising one for me, John, because he set up a goal there in a recent game, and he is a player that's always been highly thought of for having potential. We've seen him at Cork City previously, so I'm sure he will pick up a club quite quickly. In other transfer news down in Limerick, there's interest in Bastian Heary from Waterford, and obviously the replacement for him will be Barry McNamee by the looks of it, with Neil MacDonald also stating that he's currently not too far away from doing deals for 3 or 4 other unnamed players at the moment. So it's going to be an interesting 2018 for Limerick Football Club.
Yeah, well, for me, we talked about it last week, but McNamee would really strengthen that Limerick side, so would be a good signing.
And the final fixture we're going to review on the Between the Stripes LOI podcast for 2017, it was Cork City, the champions, and they had a 1-0 win over Bray Wanderers.
Yeah, and this game really, the scoreline didn't really reflect the game, because I mean, it was completely one-sided win for the champions, Kieran.
Yeah.
Peter Cherry nearly kicked a back pass into his own goal early on. Cork had plenty of chances, sadly going close. He shot from distance, just going wide. The actual goal came from a bad mistake, Conor McCormack, to make it 1-0. Cherry again was in the match, saving from Dooley. Dooley's through ball to Shepherd. Thought Cork had gone 2-0 up. That was ruled offside. Cherry saved again from Sadlier, and again from Sadlier again after a Shepherd through ball. It really was one way, and Shepherd himself forced a good save from Cherry near the end, Kieran. Like I said, completely one-sided, and a simple win at the end of the season for the champions. So, Kieran, coming up Sunday, all roads lead to the Aviva. I can't say trains because they're on strike, so all roads to the Aviva. It's Cork against Dundalk again. Run us through it.
Yeah, so we'll start with the roots of the final, John. Cork City got here with a 1-0 win over Bray in the opening round. They then put 7 past Athlone, but that's not really an achievement. Even Longford Town managed that this season.
Yep.
They then beat Longford Town 4-1 at the City Calling Stadium. Carl Shepherd with a couple of goals in that one. And there was a 1-0 win over Limerick then in the semi-finals, with Buckley getting the goal there in what was a highly competitive game. As for Dundalk, a 4-0 win over Derry, a 3-1 win against Crumlin, McMillan getting two there. That was a tougher game than it appears on paper. Crumlin actually equalised in that game, so a tough game against the non-leaguers there for Dundalk. Comfortable 4-0 win over Drogheda, and then obviously we've seen an epic semi-final clash between Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk. The first game ended 1-1 at Oriel Park, with the second game going to extra time and Dundalk coming out 4-2 winners. And Stephen O'Donnell, the man who we spoke to earlier on, he was one of the goal scorers in that game. In terms of top scorers in the Cup this season, David McMillan leads the way with 5. On the Cork side, Sadler and Shepherd both have 3 each. We're going to speak so much about Shepherd tonight on the show, John.
Yep.
Dundalk winless in their last 5 meetings against Cork City. That could play a factor. Their last win against Cork came on the 11th of October 2016, a 2-1 win at Oriel Park. And people may remember Daryl Horgan's absolutely wonder goal that night from that game. Dundalk have 19 wins from 24 in all competitions, if you include penalty shootouts and after extra time as victories. That's following the 3-0 loss against Cork, so they went on a run of 19 out of 24. Cork, they have 15 out of 26 wins in that same period, so Dundalk in slightly better form, although Cork, it must be said, 2 of those wins came in Europe, which was highly impressive. Obviously everyone's going to talk about the Sean Maguire effect. Their form has tumbled dramatically since Sean Maguire left. There was 8 wins from 17 post Maguire. 84 goals in 31 all competitions, including the Munster Senior Cup, while Maguire was at the club. So that's a ratio of 2.7 goals per game. But post-Maguire, 23 goals in 17, which is a ratio of only 1.35 per game. So we've seen that cut in half, John. So do you think Cork City have enough firepower to turn over Dundalk at the weekend?
Well, Kieran, you've outstatted me there. That was a brilliant rundown of all the stats there for this match. Quite simply, I don't think they've the firepower, Kieran. And I think it's all going to be muddled by the Carl Shepherd situation. So I think that's the big talking point that we have to get over first. For me, to all intents and purposes, he's gone. He's gone to Dundalk.
Yeah.
So he should not be playing this final.
I'd have to disagree, John. For me, ultimate pro Carl Shepherd. He's played a huge role in Cork City, not just this season, but since he signed in the last 3 seasons. He's been a key part of John Caulfield's team. He's an absolute workhorse out on that right-hand side. And that's not to disrespect his technical ability, because for me, he's one of the best wide players in the league. And a real direct running style. I love the way he takes on the full-backs. He gets plenty of crosses into the box. And he scores goals as well, although for me, he's not a striker. And that's going to be the big dilemma. I don't think John Coffey will think twice about playing Carl Shepherd on Sunday. For me, the decision will be whether he plays out on the right or whether he leads the line. For you, who should lead the line on Sunday for Cork? Will it be Campion, Sadler? We've seen Keohan up there at one stage, although I certainly don't think he'll play there Sunday. And obviously, as I said, Shepherd can also play there.
Well, this is a problem that Caulfield's got, you see. If he can't put his trust in Carl Shepherd, although you think he can, I beg to differ on this, Kieran. Like I say, if it's a done deal, that signing for Dundalk, what if he misses a couple of great chances. Everybody's going to be saying, you know, he's already signed over for Dundalk. You know, it's unprofessional. Look, I can't see how he can play that one. And I think that's going to, it's going to really leave Caulfield with a selection dilemma. Now, I think he'd probably go with Sadlier. He's got the talent to do that. The other option, I know you mentioned Akil Campion there, doesn't really excite me, I have to say. I think he's too static. His movement will be, you know, you need movement against that Dundalk back for me, Kieran.
Without wanting to sound disrespectful to Cork or John Caulfield, I think a lot of people are expecting John Caulfield to come out with a very rigid side on Sunday, to be very solid. So Campion would fit into that. He's a target man. Whatever he might not excite you, he might not make runs in behind, but he's a target man. And if you were to put someone like Sadley or even Shepherd, or even Keohane in behind him in a number 10 role where they could pick up second balls and then get the balls wide to the likes of your Shepherds, your Dooleys, that's where Cork could cause huge problem to Dundalk, who, as we've seen on Friday night against Galway, were very all over the shop defensively. Now, I'd expect them to be much more solid for this big game. But certainly it's an option, John.
It is, but I think the bigger problem he's got is how does he stop these the runners from midfield, the goals that come from midfield for Dundalk. We've seen Duffy, he's on real good form at the moment. McElhaney, he could have his own goal of the season competition. And Jane McGrath's hitting some form, plus you've got Shields, Robbie Benson. Look, the trouble's going to come from all over the pitch at Cork. And to me, Kieran, I just can't see them dealing with it.
Yeah, and you're talking about Carroll Shepherd there, his transfer saga. But one man we haven't mentioned yet is Nico Vermullen. He's gone. He is away. He's back. He's going back to his native Denmark, or as close as he can get a move possible. He did a very good interview in a local newspaper this week where he spoke about his homesickness and as much as he would like to stay. And Stephen Kenny's trying his best. He's met an offer as recent as 2 weeks ago, an improved contract offer. But he's going to be away, so you'd imagine Nico will want to put in a big performance, and he got a goal against Galway, and I'm sure what better way to go out with a goal at the Aviva.
Yeah, well, he's obviously signed some contract with another club, or there must be something virtually on the table for him to come out
with. Yeah, he did say he'd have discussions with a club when he does go back, so we'll see what comes of that.
So, but I expect him to put a professional performance in. It's not like he's signing for Cork, Kieran.
Just the one aspect of this game that I do think favours Cork is the bench. I was just looking at the benches from the weekend, and obviously John Caulfield was making a few little changes here and there, but on that bench against Bray you had the likes of Stephen Beattie, you had Buckley, Morrissey and Campion, whereas the only real experienced player on Dundalk's bench at the weekend was Connolly. So could the bench be a real key factor in this game? The last two cup finals have been extremely tight meetings, and it'll only take one moment of brilliance to win a game like this if it's going to be as tight and cagey as we think it will be. So can you imagine a player like Beattie coming off the bench with his pace and running at Dundalk? It could cause real problems for Stephen Kenny.
Absolutely, and there is a potential for this tie to go to extra time as well, which will make a difference, because as I tell my under 13 team, subs change matches. It's just as important as the supporting as the starting lineup. So it's really important that they have a strong bench. And you're right, Cork edge it. But for me, Kieran, I think Dundalk have the more settled side. I think they've got too many players that can inflict damage on Cork. And for me, I think Dundalk will have enough to beat Cork this term.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, because looking at... we were trying to do predicted lineups before we came on air here, John, and we found the Cork team a lot harder to nail down than Dundalk. For Dundalk, obviously Rodgers and goals, Gannon at full-back, Massey the other side, Gartland from Mulland. You'll have O'Donnell in midfield, and the only real selection, maybe dilemmas for Stephen Kenny will be, is Chris Shields fit enough to play? If not, then obviously Robbie Benson will probably line up alongside O'Donnell, and he's a player that can get forward and score goals. Duffy will most certainly start. He's in hot form, as you mentioned. McElhaney is the key man in this team. He'll start in the number 10 position with McMillan ahead of him. So the only other position up for grabs then is the right hand side, and for me, Jamie McGrath has been a player that's dazzled in the last couple of weeks, and he scored a fine goal against Galway on Friday night. So for me, he'll start. And it's one thing stopping McElhaney if McCormick is to sit on him for the game. How do you stop Benson, Duffy, McGrath, Shields coming off the bench spreading balls around? And then we haven't spoken about McMillan, who's in fine form and will be looking to get as close as to Maguire's goal record as possible this season. So for me, Dundalk have more attacking options across the field. They've played in big European games, they've played in cup finals. Obviously Cork have had a cup win last year and a cup final the year before that, but Dundalk know what it's about, and I think the preparation has gone in favour this year for Dundalk. Last year they were coming back from Russia, this year they have the full week to prepare, and I think that will be the deciding factor. They looked a little bit leggy in that final last year. I think we're going to see a fresh Dundalk this year. And I think it could be a little bit more comfortable than people think, John.
Yeah, well, just looking at the two potential lineups, I do agree, Kieran. And yes, Cork are the champions, but to be honest, I haven't seen them play a really good game since they beat Longford in the Cup, Kieran.
Yeah.
And that's quite a long time ago. I haven't seen them dominate teams, whereas Dundalk are going out there and they're playing teams off the pitch. They're really dominating matches. You know, I just can't see anything other than a Dundalk win.
And no offence to our gaffer who's coming on a little later in the show, John, I should say, but Neil Fenn might be too happy with me saying there's a big difference between Longford and Dundalk, so... Cork's performance, as good as it was on that night, you're dead right, they stumbled over the line as champions, and Dundalk are certainly in the better form going into this one, so I'm going to go with a Lily White's win. What's your prediction?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with a Dundalk victory as well. 2-0, Kieran.
2-0 you're going with, okay. So we're going to move on and get some professional analysis from Alan Cawley of Soccer Republic, and he joins us now. So I'm delighted to announce that we have on the show this week, it's Soccer Republic correspondent and of course a former Dundalk player, it's Alan Cawley. Alan, you're welcome to the podcast.
Thanks a million, lads.
So Alan, obviously we have you on, a huge cup final build up on the show this week and we're going to speak about that shortly, but I'd love to just go back and talk about your career personally. Obviously you started out at Leeds and a move to Sheffield Wednesday. How was that experience in England and how do you feel it set you up for life in the League of Ireland?
It's funny you finish it with how it sets you up for life, because I think that's exactly kind of what it does do. When you go over at first, obviously I was coming from Sligo, a small town, and when I was growing up as a kid, I was just thinking, this is it, you know, this my group of friends are here in Sligo and this is where I'm going to live. Even you look at kind of Dublin, only 2.5 hours away, you would have always felt that's the big city and that's kind of a million miles away from me. And then you're thrown into, obviously, across the water into the UK and big city like Leeds. And it was very difficult at the start. I suffered a lot now with homesickness, and I suppose it's something that people don't really see. People only see the money side of it and the glory and the fame and all that, but they don't see the hardship that goes on as well, because it's a real cutthroat industry. And they do everything they can to get you, but as soon as they get you, you just become a number like everyone else. And if you're not doing it, someone else is next in line, and then there's somebody after that, and somebody after that. And I suppose that's how the cycle works. But after the first year, which I did find difficult, I began to settle, and the experience was amazing at Leeds, and obviously it was probably a tough time to be there as a young fella trying to break through, because they were so successful and doing really well at the time and signing players like they signed Rio Ferdinand while I was there, I think for 18 million, which was a record at the time.
Were you there when O'Leary was there then, Alan?
Yeah, O'Leary was the manager, and it was great times to be there in terms of the success they were having, but as I say, for a young fella trying to break through, it was very hard. And the group that had broken through just before me was kind of along the same lines as the group that broke through at Man United. They were that good, the likes of Woodgate, Harry Kewell, Alan Smith, McPhail. It really was a special group of players that went through just ahead of us. So it was really difficult to break through. But in terms of the experience, as I say, it was absolutely brilliant. And yeah, it was a great time to be at Leeds. And there was a lot of Irish there, Gary Kelly, Ian Hart, Alan Mabry, Steve McPhail, as I say. And Kelly in particular was really good with the young Irish lads, and there was a huge Irish contingent as well in the youth setup as well. So it was a great time to be there, but just difficult in terms of a young lad trying to break through.
So you obviously came home then and started for UCD before making the move to Shells, who at the time, of course, were the biggest club in the country, and you were lucky enough to pick up a league medal in your time there. Was it a bit of a whirlwind, the start of your career? You had that spell in England and then you come home and, you know, you play and stand out for UCD and suddenly you're playing for the biggest club in the country.
Yeah, it was, to be fair, but it was important when I came home. I just wanted to get back, kind of enjoying my football again. I went through a difficult 6 months at Sheffield Wednesday when we were kind of cast aside and looked down upon from the manager. And it was tough to take, because when I first signed with them, they were mad about me, really, and I thought I had a real... They're making it there, but... A change of manager, then Peter Shreves left, Terry R came through, and one thing led to another, and it was a case of the contract had run out. And I could have went down the leagues lower, but it was time to come home. I had done 4 years over there at that stage, and I just felt I wanted to come home at that, rather than going down the leagues. And it was a great time to go and sign with UCD, because Paul Doolan was the manager, and I trained one or two nights, and he signed me straight away and threw me into the first team. And I had a month to UCD, because I was back enjoying my football again, playing with a manager who wanted me. A great group of lads as well, a brilliant bunch of lads, and I really enjoyed my time there. And as you say, after only 18 months then, Shelburne were the kingpins at the time, and Pat Fenlon, and they had a great squad, and Pat came looking for me and signed me, and
So it didn't get off to the best start to Shelburne because UCD ended up putting in an objection to the transfer. I ended up missing 11 weeks and ended up in the High Courts, which was a bit of a bizarre situation, really. And it was mad that it came to that. But after I got that sorted out, and Pat and Ollie Byrne, to be fair, stuck by me. And as did Fran Gavin, who was the PFEI chairman at the time. I know he gets a bit of bad press at the moment, but Fran was really good to me when he was the chairman of the PFEI. And eventually we got that sorted. And yeah, I went on and played with Shelburne then for the rest of the league, and we ended up winning the league. So it came to a good end, but it was a tough start.
So Alan, then one thing I found strange was that you only stayed with Shelburne for a year. Do you ever regret not staying with Shelburne longer, considering the success they were having at that stage in Irish football?
Yeah, it was tough because they went out after Shelby that year in Europe and all, and then Pat went out and signed five or six of the top players in the league from Bohemians, and they were all actually at Bohemians. And we almost became like it was a case of Chelsea at the time, where obviously Abramovich took over, and the joke that was going around was Chelsky. Everyone in Ireland was calling us Chelsky because obviously we were after having to run in Europe, and then Pat signed five or six players, and they gambled heavily on trying to break through Europe again the following year. And it was just difficult to get a game. I found it really hard. Like, there was training games that were harder than first team games, to be honest with you, because the level of quality that was in the squad, I don't think we've seen a squad assemble like it in the league even since. And I know Dundalk have had an amazing run and were a brilliant team and probably the best team I have seen in the league. But in terms of the squad that we had at Chelsea, like, you had 22, 24 first team players in a squad, and it was just difficult for really top players to get a game. And I obviously found it difficult to break in, and then it was a case of just wanting to go out playing. And I ended up down in Longford, which wasn't a great move, to be honest, because Alan Matthews didn't really suit my style of playing. Why he was interested in signing me, I'll never know, because he played a completely different style to the type of player I was. So that really didn't work out. And it was just a case of trying to go and get first-team football somewhere then and trying to start all over again and just get playing regular football.
Yeah, my next question was going to be about your time in Longford, but I think you've answered what I wanted to ask you there. So we'll move on, Alan, and we'll start talk about what we brought you on for. It's the cup final this weekend. There's huge build-up in the media, and one thing that's capturing all the headlines is Mark McNulty's, I don't know, do we describe it as a rant or an overzealous celebration, whatever way you want to label it. Have you ever been involved with anything like that during your career where I suppose there's something that maybe rattles one dressing room, or... Have you ever been involved in anything like that?
Not really amongst the players, I would have to say. Obviously, there's when you're on the pitch, that's more when it involves the players, because there's verbals and there's slagging and whatever goes on, which is only normal, especially amongst rivals. And you would expect that. And you look at the rivalry that Cork and Dundalk have created over the last 3 or 4 years, and it's brilliant to see, because we, especially us now in the media, you want to see rivalries and you want to have that bit of needle created going into games and big talking points. But certainly this one, it's a really unusual one, because you would normally associate war of words kind of with the managers maybe, and that's what I would have seen over the years, is some verbals between managers, but certainly not a player as such. And I've seen the Mark McNulty stuff, and I know his history because he'd done this last year as well after they won the cup. And to do it once, you're kind of thinking, all right, you had your little go, move on. But for him to do it twice, and I know Nulty really well, and he's been a great servant to Cork, and he's had to bide his time a long time, to actually make the jersey his number one. He was second choice for years and years, and he has been a great keeper over the past 3 or 4 years throughout Cork's good times. But I was really disappointed. I thought there were idiotic comments. I seen the video, and it was almost a bit playing up to the galleries, and especially the week of a cup final, you don't do that. And it's one thing you don't associate with Dundalk, no matter what the success they've had. The one thing I've always praised them on and admired them for is how humble they are as a group. They never seem to get too big for their boots. And I think that comes from the manager. Obviously, he instills that in them. And Stephen's the same. No matter what success they've had over the past 3 or 4 years, he treats every opposition and every team with the same respect that they deserve. And as I said, I've seen McNulty's comments, and I thought they were idiotic comments, to be fair. And stupid, really, from him. And it's not like he's a young kid. He's 37 now, I think, Mark. He should have a bit more nous about him than that. And he's a lot more experienced than to be doing stuff like that. And I thought it was stupid, really.
Yeah, crazy situation. And another funny situation we find with Cal Shepherd, who's basically signed, as far as we know, he's pen to paper on a deal for Dundalk next season. We're gonna debate, but how do you think, how will that affect him? Will he even be on the pitch?
I'm so glad you brought that up, lads, because I've been thinking about this all week since I heard that. Now, there was rumours that possibly he could go, and we were down in Cork covering a lot of their games towards the end of the season, and you were hearing rumours. But for it to be more or less announced, which I think it's out in the open now that everybody seems to have the opinion that he is going to sign. I don't think there's any secret. I think Stephen even said that in his comments that when he was asked about it yesterday with the media, he more or less said he will be kind of going. And I just find it bizarre. And again, I was trying to think all day, just has there been a situation again with a player going into a cup final and them knowing that the following day he's going to their nearest rivals? Now, I know over the years, rivals, there is players that pass on and go to rivals, maybe after a league campaign or whatever. But I've never heard of it when you're going into a cup final and the players knowing and John Caulfield knowing that he will obviously be in their dressing room on Sunday, and win, lose or draw, he'll become a Dundalk player maybe from Monday or Tuesday onwards or whatever the agreement is. And I just find it bizarre. And I would tend to agree with you. If I was the manager and in John Caulfield's shoes, I would seriously question whether I could start Carl Shepherd on Sunday. And I think he's been a brilliant servant to them over the past 3 years. He's done brilliant for them. Again, he has 9 league goals this season. He worked up a brilliant partnership with Sean Maguire. And even when Maguire left, he was left with the mantle. Now, he hasn't scored a league goal since Maguire left, but he's led the line the last 3, 4, 5 games. He's a brilliantly honest lad. One thing I really appreciate Shepherd is how hard he works. And I think if he does play on Sunday, he'll give everything because he seems to be that kind of honest lad and he will work hard for them. But just in terms of his mindset and the other players around him and the dynamic of the dressing room and them looking at him knowing we're going in against our nearest rivals, and we've already spoke about the needle with McNulty and what goes on amongst the sets of players. And for him to be feeling as though I'll be playing with you our last game, lads, and then I'm going to join them, I think it's a really bizarre situation.
I think it's outrageous, Alan. I mean, Kieran thinks he'll be professional, he'll play his game, but to me, you know, he may do his best, but what if he misses a sitter in the last minute or something like that? It's just...
Yeah, I do think he'd be professional, and I won't question that. And that's one thing, you look at Shepherd playing, and he's one of the most hard-working players in the league.
He is.
And the effort that he puts into the games. And as I say, I think in the 3 years, he's been a bit of an unsung hero at Cork. I think he's done a brilliant job. And that would lead me to question why he actually wants to leave Cork, because he's almost found his home down there in terms of being somewhere happy amongst a group of players that are successful and winning things, and he seems to be one of the main men. And I think one of the reasons he wants to go is to be closer to home, which fair enough if that's his reason, but I certainly wouldn't want to leave a dressing room, a dynamic like that where I feel really appreciated and happy. But for him to be joining the nearest rivals, and as I say, it more or less announced this week, if I was John Caulfield, I'd be seriously questioning whether to start him on Sunday. But I think the position John is in, and especially since Maguire has gone, I don't think he has anyone else. And we've already seen him try Campion, and he's tried Ellis, and none of them have worked out. You only have to look at the last 12 games since Maguire has left. They've only scored 10 goals. And you consider the 20 the games before that, and obviously the 21 before that, they had scored 57 with Maguire. So it just goes to show you, obviously, the huge loss that Maguire was. And Shepherd has been, obviously, trying to fill that mantle. And if they take Shepherd out of the team and Maguire, that's 29 goals out of the team that they've scored. So I don't think John has an option in that front. And I think if he did have an option, he would question whether to play him. But I don't know. It just really is bizarre.
Yeah, just reading the media reports, Alan, it does seem the reason for Carl Shepherd wanting to move to Dundalk is that he wants to move closer to Dublin. And as you said, he's been a great servant to Cork City over the last 3 years. For me, he's one of the best. I know you're talking about him there as a striker filling in for Maguire, but for me, he's one of the best wide men in the league. Real direct running, fantastic fitness. As you said, ultimate professional, works his socks off and presses from the front. And I think that's one of the main reasons why Stephen Kenny's looking to bring him into Dundalk. He'd really fit into that real pressing style that Dundalk play. And that's for me, that's why he should play on Sunday. He'll be the ultimate pro. He's going to give it everything. And what better way to walk into the Dundalk dressing room next season, having scored possibly maybe a winner. And, you know, that's the best way he could put his case forward for starting for Dundalk next season.
Yeah, and that's all very fair, Kieran. I would agree with a lot of what you say. And as you say, I can totally see why Stephen Kenny would want to sign him. And especially in that right wing area where they find it difficult, because Mountney, who's a good player, but I don't think technically he's good, he's workmanlike. Yeah. But Shepherd, especially, who's done such a great, brilliant job on the right, and I know he's had to play instead of Maguire up front the last 10, 11 games, but certainly on the right, I've named him in my team of the year as well, ahead of Conan Byrne. I think Conan Byrne has been absolutely brilliant on the right for Pats, yeah, but Shepherd has done better, and he worked up a brilliant partnership with Maguire while they were there. He set up so many of Maguire's goals. And yeah, if he does play on Sunday, I've no doubt he'll give his all, and he'll be as honest as the day is long, and do what Carl Shepherd does best. But certainly, if I was a teammate of him, looking at him, sitting alongside me, going out to play against my nearest rivals, I'd be looking at him with a second glance, just thinking, I'm not so sure about Juno doing what you're doing.
Well, Alan, there was so much more we wanted to ask you, but we've gone way over time. So that's just the off-field stuff we've discussed there. But lucky enough, we have Fabio coming on next, so he's going to give us the on-field predictions. But just from yourself, I'd love to get your prediction for Sunday's final.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really tight, and as we've seen already with the games, they normally tend to be like that. But I was even just going through some notes today, and as much as I think Dundalk are a better technically gifted side than Cork City, and especially I say that even more so without Maguire, he's been a massive difference, as we all know, and he almost gives the Cork City that. He makes them into a great team rather than just a good team. But certainly Cork's record over Dundalk, you look at them last year, 5 times they met, they've beat them 4 times. This year they've played 4 times and they've beaten them 3 times. So Cork's head-to-head against Dundalk is absolutely unbelievable. It really is, and that has to give them so much confidence going into the game on Sunday. But I certainly feel Dundalk have more about them technically. They have the better players going forward. You look at McMillan, 16 goals. Benson has 9 from midfield. McElhenney, 10. Duffy, 8. Like, there's a huge amount of goals and creativity amongst that attack in 4 or 5. And I think Dundalk may just edge it on Sunday. And that's the prediction. I think it will be tight, but I think Dundalk owe them one. And I think they'll edge it on Sunday.
Alan, been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us. And enjoy the game on Sunday.
No problem. Thanks for having me, lads. And you enjoy the game also.
Cheers, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
So great to get the views of Alan Cawley from Soccer Republic. We're going to take a little break now from our FAI Cup coverage. We're going to speak to the Cove Ramblers boss, Stephen Henderson, who has had a lot to say in recent weeks about league structure for next season. His Cove side were extremely unlucky not to get promoted this year. They'll obviously be hoping next year that the playoffs are a route that are available to them. They were denied that this year through what can only be described as absolutely reckless decision-making from the FAI. And he had some very passionate views on that. And this is the interview we recorded with him yesterday. So enjoy, folks. So I'm delighted to be joined now by a good friend of the podcast this season. It's his third appearance this season. We're very grateful to have him here for the final show of the campaign. It's, of course, the Cove boss, Stephen Henderson. Stephen, you're very welcome to the show.
Buggy, thanks very much for having me on again. Really appreciate it, my friend.
So we're going to trash it out, Stephen, over the league structure for next year. It's something myself and yourself had a little debate about in recent days on social media. And I'm just after throwing up a poll on the Between the Stripes Twitter account. Basically, what way people want to see the league structured next year. 80% at the moment saying they want just the most traditional one we've seen in recent years of one up automatically with one playoff position. So potential for 2 teams to go up from the first division. I offered the more radical one of 3 down automatically, 2 automatically going up and a playoff position. So nobody seems to have opted for that more radical one. But I'd love to get your views on it, Stephen. What way do you feel the league should be structured next season?
I think we need a radical overhaul, and that's the truth, Ciarán. I just think we need a radical overhaul for the league in general. You know, people will criticise me for saying that.
How radical are we speaking here, Stephen?
Sorry?
How radical are we speaking?
I do think, that, you know, we have 2 10-team leagues and the potential is there to make the 2 10-leagues hugely competitive. I think you've already seen this year as regards the Premier Division. It's very hard to stay without facts, I don't know, but I'm going to assume that attendances are up this year. And, you know, I only caught up with Emma. With Soccer Republic there, and the lads are talking about Johnny Maguire and Dundalk and this kind of thing as the reason why attendance are up. There's no doubt they would have had something to do with it. I genuinely believe the reason why attendances will be up and the reason why Galway are getting 2,500 people at the last match of their season is because there was no dead rubbers this year. There was something to be played for. You know, the rewards are huge now in League of Ireland football in the context of European football. Mm-hmm. And if we can make, mediocrity, the punishment for that, it just makes the league hugely competitive. I think that's what needs to be done. I think the league needs to be hugely competitive in order to get the crowds to come back through the gate. I think the Premier Division has shown that. I think if you look over the other side, the Forgotten League, which is the 4th Division, the way she was just hugely disrespected and dismissed this year. You know, crowds are down in that league. By default, we found a way to get people through the gate. So we need to sit down and what are the lessons we've learned from this year? First of all, don't ever take the playoffs away again. It's ridiculous to do it in the 4th place.
Yeah.
That's been proven. And the second thing is, you know, if you have small leagues, you can literally make them hugely exciting. You can make them hugely exciting right up to the last game of the season. where, like I said, the rewards are huge, and the punishments, you know, are really harsh.
The question, I suppose, the criticism, Stephen, people will make of people like yourself saying that you know, more playoff places or more promotion places for the first division. Some people may question if teams are of a high enough standard to come into the Premier Division. So let's say, for example, the FAI were to turn around next season. Obviously, you have your champions going up into the Premier. But if there was to be an extended playoff system where, let's say, maybe second, third, fourth and fifth were to be involved in the playoffs, people might say that the team finishing close to mid-table in the first division maybe don't deserve to be in a position where they could end up playing Premier Division football. So I'd love to get your views on that.
Well, what I was suggesting is the top two in the fourth division automatically go up and the bottom two automatically come down. And then the third in the fourth would play the eighth or ninth in the Prem.
Yeah, it'd be the eighth next season, yeah.
Now, realistically, if the standards are that big as people are suggesting that they are, the team in that playoff in the Premier Division should have a stroll. Do you know what I mean? Over two legs, they should have a stroll. If that's as big as the gap is. What I'm trying to suggest here is that, you know, you have Longford Town, the fourth division, historically a very big club. You have Shelbourne, historically a very big club. You know, you have Waterford there, who are gone up now this year. The investment is there. And what these clubs also offer is that, you know, they have a fan base. They have crowds that will go and see them playing in Premier Division football. But they'll also go and support them if they're doing well in the fourth division. So that in itself is going to generate the crowds, I think, is that, you know, if you have something to play for, whether it's, you know, fourth and second, you know, I think that will genuinely increase the gate. So genuinely do. If you look at, you know, I seen this thing here, one up, one down, and I got bored looking at it. You know, I just think League of Ireland football, I think, I've said this before, I think we need to rebrand it. I think League of Ireland football now is synonymous with elements of failure. Clubs going out of business this year. You know, we've had the match fixing scandals. We've had so much negativity thrown through the league, and it's overshadowed. I don't know, Kieran, have you seen the goal of the season last night? Some of the stuff that's been produced in our league is fantastic. How do we get a way of promoting this in a more positive, in a positive manner? And I think we've seen there with particularly in the Premier Division, there was an awful lot of teams went out to try and win as many games as possible, because with the three going down, I think that, you know, they knew they had to win a few games, and it made for excitement. The goals were exceptional, and the league itself, she looked brilliant this year. You know, the goals that were scored were fantastic this year. Some of the games that we had on the telly were fantastic. Do you know what I mean? If you looked at, you know, we looked at Galway and the Dock one night, and then you're looking at Man United the next day. You know, Man United are putting you to sleep, but yet Dundalk and Galway are going throwing four trees at you. The league is there, and she has a load to offer. There's just too much negativity around her. And I just still believe that we need to kind of really radically change the format that really pushes teams. If you look at it realistically, in the Premier Division, 40% of the teams potentially can play in Europe. That's huge. That's huge, that is, you know. And if we can bring it in that, like, nearly, what, 30% of them can get relegated. You know, that's really exciting. I think that's really exciting. I think that's what supporters want. They have something to play for. There's something, you know, there's different elements of success. Dundalk, the Corks, the Rovers, they'll be based on will they win the leagues. Do you know what I mean? And then we had the Galways and the Finn Harps and the Sligos this year. Their success was staying in the league. So, you know, if we can really come up with a really, really good structure, an exciting structure, that, you know, that we can start drawing the crowds back in and stop going back to the stuff that doesn't work. We've done so much here that doesn't work. Why can't we just really radicalise it, really make it exciting, really promote it? Because the talent is there in terms of the coaches we have in this country and the players we have in this country. So now can we just really kind of get this league as exciting as possible? And that means, you know, as I said, the reward for success is huge, but, like, yeah, you know, the punishment is, you know, that's fairly severe as well if you're not successful.
Yeah, and as you've mentioned there, we've seen this before, this two sets of 10 leagues. It simply didn't work. Too many repetitive fixtures, too many midweek games. But, Stephen, let's get down to the crunch of this argument. you were talking there about potentially 30% of the top flight being relegated if this was to be the structure. Are we in danger of creating yo-yo clubs?
Well, if clubs don't do their business, the yo-yo clubs in the context of, going up and down, if we make the boat leagues, I really believe you have to strengthen your weakest link here. That's fundamentally in any business model that you try and put together. You got to strengthen your weakest link. The first thing we have to do is put our hands up and admit there is a fourth division there, right? And, and when we do that, then we say, right, she's our weakest link at this moment in time. She's neglected. She's there for a reason. She's a box ticks and exercise. That's as far as I can see at the moment.
Yep.
But if we can really put that structure in place that makes that exciting and makes that really competitive, and we can start generating crowds in that division as well, you know what I mean? Then the quality of player going into those sides will improve. The quality of the matches, the high intensity of the matches. You have Premier teams coming down and going up. So the league itself is going to benefit in terms of the quality. And the teams that come out of that fourth division are then well prepared to compete in the Premier Division. You know what I mean? How the clubs progress after that is completely up to them. Well, if we start getting the crowds in the gates, that'll generate the finance. If you get crowds in the gates, you get more sponsorship. That generates finance. Everything has a knock-on effect through positivity.
But Stephen, with the European money there is available for the top clubs in the Premier Division, and that's only going to increase in the coming years, with UEFA's competitions getting bigger and bigger and more revenue coming in, we're going to see more money for the Irish clubs, which is great. But there is a danger of a divide being created there, and even when in the first division, the prize money is absolutely minimum. I think at the moment it's around 25,000. So even with if you were getting good strong gates, you're coming up against a team that's making 210,000 off one round in Europe. Surely you can't compete with that.
No, you can't. But this is going back to the whole structure of the league. We're talking about structures here. Obviously, there's other stuff to be done in terms of investment in the league, in terms of increasing the prize money for both divisions. I don't think that's just the FAI. I think that's what we need to get the government involved in that. The UEFA money has to be distributed a little bit more fairly than what it is. If we look at the Finnish model, how their money is distributed, money should be going back into our leagues. There's absolutely no question of that. But I think no matter what league you look at, there's always three or four clubs. Over in England, you had the top four, the top six all the time. There's always going to be clubs that are stronger than everybody else. That's where all the money goes. That's everywhere, all across Europe, that happens. You have your elite clubs within the elite group. But what we can't be doing is just letting them focus. We have to have something for other teams to focus on, and to improve the quality of the league. So as a team from nowhere, can come in and grab a top four spot and get a piece of that pie and then reinvest it back. And then, you have a top five team. And so realistically what you're trying to do is improve the quality of both leagues. Now, when a team comes from the fourth division, she's able to sustain the Premier Division status and then hopefully reinvest and then try and tip away. Like we're saying, 40% of the teams get into Europe. So, they have to try and attain that. I think when businessmen look at that as well, they're saying, hang on a minute, there's money to be made in League of World of Football. They have a 10-team league and 40% of them can get into Europe. So you can start attracting big money men into the league, I do believe, eventually. When they start looking at the prospects of European football, and as you say, you play a game and you get $250,000. So for minimum investment, but we have to look at the boat leagues, Kieran, and make boat leagues strong. So there's going to be that top four, probably Dundalk, Cork, Shamrock Rovers, and Derry City to an extent are probably our top four teams at the moment. But you'll always have Sligo Rovers have huge potential. Who else is
St. Pat's, obviously, great tradition there.
There's teams there with great tradition that can come up and come out of nowhere and grab a fourth. And then you can have a top five. And then our league is really improving. And ultimately, that's what we want for our league. We want our league to improve, no end. But we need to, I do think we have to look at what our weakest link is. Our weakest link is this fourth division. And, we have to look at it. How can we structure it? How can we promote it and regain the quality of it? And by bringing in two promotions, clubs themselves will have a look at it And, you know, they will improve. Players will go to them because they know there's a good chance of promotion. You know what I mean? They won't look at it as a dead rubber league. They'll say, hang on, there's a real chance to get in here. There's a real chance to get yourself up into the Premier Division. But we have to acknowledge she exists first. And then when we do that, improve the quality of that division. And the knock-on effect of that is that the Premier Division will always be strong. And then when the teams do go up, they're better prepared to sustain that Premier Division status and not be this yo-yo club that we're talking about.
Finally, Stephen, we started off this interview by talking about the disrespect that has been shown to the First Division in recent years. I have to ask you about next season. The season just ended a couple of weeks ago for your side, Cove, who were extremely unlucky, of course, not to get up into the Premier for next year. But at this moment in time, there's still no structure set out. That's why we're having this debate here. How difficult is it for a club like Cove, who obviously have ambitions of challenging again next year, to plan a budget and to go out and get the players they need to compete for next year, when at this moment in time we still don't know how many playoff places will be available or how the playoffs are going to work?
Or if there even are going to be playoffs.
Yeah, correct,
you know
what
I mean? We don't know what the story is. And, you know, it is. It's extremely difficult because, you know, straight away, what we have to do now as a club, we have to go out and we start have that looking for people to come in as sponsors. We have to start looking to try and generate money. You know, so that's first and foremost. That's what we have to do. But, you know, most of the companies have their budgets gone by January. So I can't go into a business now and say, look, we're going to... You know, we've done well. We've been second and third the last 2 years. We've got the qualifying of the FA Cups and this kind of stuff. You know, this year we really want to have a go off hitting the playoffs. But I can't actually go in and say that to them because I don't know what I'm trying to sell to sponsors.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm trying to sell to people who would invest money in the club. Do you know what I mean? That's why I'm saying whatever this structure is, you know, please have the decency. Just have the decency to do it early. Don't go off on a break now after the FAI Cup for 3 or 4 months and then tell us, you know, 6 weeks before the season what the new structure is. Give us all a proper chance, a proper opportunity to, you know, let us know what the story is. Is it 2 going up? Is it 1 going up? Are the playoffs coming back? You know, so let us do that so as we can go out and try and generate finance for our clubs. If we can do that, then obviously, then as you're saying, then the player recruitment process starts. Then we can go and talk to players and then tell them this is what our ambition is for the year. All I can tell the players at the moment, look, lads, all we want to try and be is competitive next year. I don't know what the structure is. If there's playoffs there, that's what we really want to be targeting. You know, we had the opportunity to win the league this year. We didn't take it. You know, maybe can we go and try and win that next year? I don't know. But as you say, until we know what the structures are for next year, it's very, very difficult for us. Because when we're going looking for money off people, we don't know what we're selling.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up perfectly there, Stephen. So that's where we'll leave it for today. I want to thank you again for joining us on the show today, and not just today, throughout the season. Obviously to your club as well, Cove. They've been a great help to ourselves here in promoting the podcast throughout the year. So thanks very much, and the very, very best of luck for next season in the First Division.
Now, come here again. I'll thank you again, and well done to yourself and John. It's a fabulous show you have thrown on there. And when we go on about promoting the league, yourself and, you know, you're well up there. So thanks a million. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Stephen. Means a lot to us. Thanks very much.
See you, big man. God bless.
So thanks again to Stephen Henderson there, a great supporter of the podcast since we've started this season. And now we're going to bring you two interviews. Firstly with Neil Fenn and secondly with Ty from the Opal jersey.
So we're joined on the show now by a man who had foot in both camps during his career. He played for Dundalk and he won a league title with Cork City. And of course, it's the current Longford Town manager, Neil Fenn. Neil, you're welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, lads.
So before we crack on and talk about the cup final, Neil, any Longford Town news for the folks at home?
Not as we speak at the moment. There's a couple of things in the pipeline, but as we speak, nothing I can really announce. No exclusives, I'm afraid. Not yet.
So we'll move on. So, and obviously, your Longford team came up against Cork in the cup this year, and were, despite a good performance from Longford in the second half, heavily beaten 4-1 on the night by what I have to say was a brilliant Cork City on the night. From what I gathered from that game, Longford kind of set up a bit differently to how they normally would. It looked to be a more defensive approach, maybe to catch Cork on the counter attack. But Cork just got on the front foot in that game. They never eased off. And, you know, they were just ruthless on the night. So how, if you were the Dundalk manager, Stephen Kenny, how would you set up against Cork on Sunday?
If I was the Dundalk manager, I would set up exactly how I'd normally set up, I wouldn't change a thing. I felt we had to change our game a little bit to give Cork a little bit more respect than, you know, a little bit more respect than other teams we played. But they were, you know, on those games, you're hoping that Cork City have a bad performance and we have a good performance.
Yeah, and obviously, Neil, you're a man that was involved in some big transfers during your career, and all the talk ahead of this game is revolving around Carroll Shepherd. It looks like it's a done deal that he's going to Dundalk. This is going to be his final game against the Lily Whites. Just, you know, obviously, you were involved in a situation where you then played against your former club, Dundalk, when you were with Shamrock Rovers. How did that atmosphere, that whole atmosphere around the game, affect your performance? Do you feel it could be a factor on Sunday's game?
I think there's enough going on around the game to for that to be a major factor. The game that I played in for Shamrock Rovers against Dundalk, you know, the score was, you know, we were heavily beaten that night, and the fact that it inspired the whole of a team because it's kind of all Dundalk were playing for at the time. But there's so much more to it than just Cole Shepherd playing against Dundalk, so I can't see it being a major factor. It's just an extra little bit of needle, which, you know, there's enough of it going on at the moment around the two teams.
Yeah, you mentioned the needle. Mark McNulty is a man you played with. Were you surprised by his comments, or do you feel it's just been blown out of proportion by the media, perhaps?
His comments, I don't know what, I haven't read him. What? The singing?
The singing, yeah.
Am I surprised? No, he did it last year as well, so not really massively surprised. You know, once you get into, if you've won a league or you've won a cup and you're with the lads and, you know, you're singing different songs and that, it's, you know, people look too much into it maybe, and I'm sure Knowles has experienced enough now to know what Wine's done the whole cup, so he certainly wound them up anyway.
And obviously you're a man that you weren't part of the starting 11 that played in the cup final, the first cup final in the Aviva in 2010, but you were part of that Shamrock Rovers squad. What was that like as an experience, and the whole build up during the week? As a player, what's it like to be involved in?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I was involved in the 2005 Cork team that went to the cup final when we won the league, and some people said, you know, we took our foot off the gas for the 2 weeks in between, but I don't think that was the case. I just think that the situation of the time, the weather, the conditions suited Drogheda better than us on the day. It was windy, it was wet, it was the pitch wasn't great at Lansdowne, and I was involved in the double winning team of Bowes when we played at the what's that stadium again? It's gone out of my head now. Not the Aviva, the other one, but anyway, we played there and we won that game, and, you know, we had a bit of a rest, but Pat Fenlon was on us to not let, you know, any distractions get in the way during the week, and we won that game. So the game with Shamrock Rovers and I was involved in, it was just like any other, you know, build up to a cup final, really. You just try and do your best on the day, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Yeah, and currently Dundalk are without a win in 5 against Cork City. Did you have a bogey team during your career, Neil?
I think in 2005, definitely was Drogheda was our bogey team. I'm not sure if we beat them once. They beat us in the Satanta Cup final. They beat us in the Cup final that year, the FAI Cup final. So they were our bogey team that year.
And did that affect how you would approach the games against Drogheda? Do you feel maybe Dundalk might look to approach this game differently on Sunday?
No. Again, I don't think Stephen will change. You know, you don't get to win leagues and get through to Cup finals by changing too much. I'm sure they've looked at Cork and ways they can exploit it, whereas maybe being a little bit more direct, maybe it's sitting back a little bit, I don't know. But I don't think they'll be changing too much. Like you say, it's hard to pick a winner this Saturday because you've got, obviously, if you look at the league table, you fancy Cork. If you look at the form table, you'll fancy Dundalk. But head-to-head, Cork are edging it, so it's a tough one to pick.
Yeah, and Cork don't seem to be a team that are receiving a lot of praise in the media for their league success. They're branded by a lot of people as a more direct team than Dundalk, and maybe that is the case, but do you feel they're unfairly been branded as a long ball team?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you don't win the league by being a poor team, you know, whether or not they play as much possession, as many passes as other teams, Dundalk or whatever, I don't think that concerns them too much. I think they're more worried. They've won the league and they've done it their way. I think they've been building that squad over a couple of years and they've finally won the league. Fair play to them.
Yeah, and finally, Neil, your Longford team have also they received a lot of praise since you came in for the style of football. It's a real possession-based game. It's very similar to the style Dundalk play, but obviously on a lesser level in the first division at the moment, and obviously you'll be hopeful of getting up into the big time next year. But I suppose Stephen Kenny must be one of the managers you really admire within the league, considering the football his team does play.
Yeah, I think they play amazing stuff, and all the players, not just the way they play, their fitness levels, the condition they're in. I speak to Graham Byrne a lot, the fitness coach there, so I know what it takes to get the amount of effort he puts into it, and how all the players buy into it. But having said that, Cork are a big physical fit team as well, so it's not just the style of football, it's the type of player they get, lads buying into the kind of whole fitness and weight culture, which is something I want to try and get going at Longford.
Yeah, well, we can certainly see the difference even just from your first season in charge. But Neil, I'm gonna push you, and I'm gonna ask you for a prediction for the final.
I'm gonna go with a Cork City win.
Neil, you've just done your popularity down in Dundalk an awful turn again.
I'm sure, knowing my luck, the way I predict stuff, I'm sure that's a blessing in disguise for him, because I can't pick a winner anywhere. But
I wouldn't mind Dundalk.
I just think the way the games go head to head, if you're on a head to head basis, I just think Cork might nick it.
Dundalk was one of our highest listenerships last week, John.
Was.
Neil,
let's hope for a good game anyway. That's the most important thing. Good open game.
Because the last few finals haven't been great. So let's hope that this is a good one. We get a few moments of magic from the likes of Paddy McElhaney and so on. Yeah, sadly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Neil, it's been a pleasure. I know you're off to watch the under-19s final tonight. So enjoy that. And maybe you might pick up a few gems for Longford Town along the way.
You'll be the first to know, lads. See you later. Cheers.
We'll get you on the Christmas special.
Yeah, see you later. Bye.
Best of luck. Thanks very much.
Bye. Thanks again, Neil.
Tonight's episode of Between the Stripes LOI podcast is sponsored by Flomax Industrial Equipment. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to introduce our final guest of the 2017 season. It's Tadhg from the Opal jersey, who is a Cork City fan and a massive Republic of Ireland fan. So we're obviously going to discuss this Sunday's Cup final and a little bit on the upcoming Denmark playoff game. Tadhg, you're welcome to the show.
How's it going, lads?
So, Tadhg, how's the excitement levels building in Cork at the moment ahead of Sunday's final?
Yeah, things are tense, all right. Everyone's excited. It's a huge match. The club has got a chance here to do the double. It's something that's never been achieved before by Cork City. So, and after last year's success, everyone's appetite is whetted, really. It's been a fantastic season, and like it's been the culmination of a huge amount of rebuilding work gone on by the club, but off the field and on the field, and it's been an amazing season to win the league 12 years after the last success. So, yeah. There'll be a lot of people travelling, hopefully, and all in full voice.
Yeah, and is there any word on ticket sales yet, Tadhg, how they're going down in Turner's Cross?
No, but you'd be hoping for 12,000 or so. We've averaged 4,500 at the home matches this year in the league, which is phenomenal figures, really. And there was great crowds the last 2 years. There's a train going up all the way direct Cork City train coming up. So, you'd be hoping, north of 10,000 anyway, you'd hope.
Yeah, it was something I was actually supposed to ask our earlier guest, but unfortunately we went overtime in a couple of the interviews. So I'm going to ask yourself now, Tadhg, just from a marketing point of view, how do you feel this final has been marketed? Has the FAI done enough? Because for me, the last 2 years have been a golden opportunity for the FAI to market this final. Last year we had a Dundalk team who achieved stuff that had never been achieved before in the history of Irish football, an amazing European run. And then towards the tail end of the season, they had Darrell Horgan and Andy Boyle getting into the Republic of Ireland squad, which was a great marketing tool for the league. But they just seemed to accept that was going to be enough to get people out. And we only seen just over 20,000 turning up for a great clash of two fantastic clubs. For me, this game should be easily attracting over 30,000 people. And we always see that with the rural clubs as well. And the size of Cork and Dundalk being the size of the town it is, we should be seeing much higher than 20,000. So I'd like to just get your views on that.
Absolutely. It's a perennial issue, really, with the League of Ireland. There's so much opportunity for promoting this game. The story about Shawnee Maguire, really, and the impact he had last year. It's just tailor-made, but there doesn't seem to be very much being done about it. I did just notice now that there's a good piece on Twitter there with a quiz with Darrell Horgan and Shawnee Maguire asking each other questions, which is a great little initiative. But the story of the League of Ireland is the players, the national team of tomorrow are the guys playing here now. Mm. And And, you know, I'm sure on Sunday there'll be fellas who are playing their last game in the country before they go over to England again. It's a ripe opportunity. Like, and there's three big games in England on Sunday that we're competing against.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. There's just, like, it's frustrating, really. Like, there's so much more that could be done. You know, I mean, Dundalk fans travel in great numbers, Cork City fans travel in great numbers, and, you know, and there's neutrals there, but I mean, it's really just lacking, really, in kind of marketing-driven initiatives, you know, a bit of creativity.
Yeah, so we'll move on now to Cork City themselves. Caulfield has signed a new two-year deal. I'd imagine you're delighted with that news.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, as I was saying earlier, like, the club is building year on year. It's all about sustainability and continuing the kind of trajectory that's gone, you know, since Forest took over in 2010. Things have stepped up another level when Caulfield took over. You know, I mean, we've had three top two finishes and obviously the league this year. I mean, he's a real local favourite in terms of, you know, he's put bums on the seats, so to speak, you know, and the attendances have increased since he's come in. 2 more years is understandable. You know, there's a big season ahead next year now after the league win. And, you know, that'll bring an awful lot of certainty to the players as well. You know, he managed to convince the likes of Maguire, O'Connor and Dooley to stick around after last year, you know, when they had offers to go to England. And in terms of attracting new players, like having the stability of the manager in place is a huge thing, definitely. I mean, the other few things that have happened is the club has moved to 52-week contracts now.
Yeah.
And appointed a general manager this week, you know, so it's all about building to the future.
Of course, one man who hasn't signed a new contract, and it doesn't look like he will, is Carroll Shepherd. Some boos from in the final league game against Bray, and I've seen this week, all I'm going to describe it is just stupid stuff on social media. Surely a player that's, you know, put so much into the cause over the last 3 years at Cork and been a huge part of the title win this season, surely he should be getting a bit more, much more respect than that.
Absolutely. I think those people are really in the minority. Like, I mean, most people are very appreciative of Shepherd.
Yeah.
You know, he's had three great seasons. Well, the first season he was, you know, he was a slow starter. He was playing in the left wing. You know, the team was differently built. Caulfield changed it hugely last year. You know, they did a lot of surgery on the team and, you know, got rid of the likes of Billy Denny and Liam Miller and Marcus Sullivan and brought in kind of, you know, guys who could move quicker and pass quicker, like a Bulger, Johnny Maguire, Dooley, and they've really benefited Shepherd. You know, he had a great season last year and even better this year. Disappointing if it's true that he's leaving, but you know, he's from North Dublin. He'd do well to, you know, to assimilate into Cork life. But you know, you could only wish him well, really. You know, it's a pity though if it's true that he's leaving and going to Dundalk. But you know, that's the game we're in.
And how are you feeling ahead of this upcoming close season? There's reports at the moment Lincoln Dooley with a move away. Obviously, Ryan Delaney will be going back to Burton, we'd imagine. Kieran Sadler, a man always linked with English football. And then even the likes of Greg Bulger have been linked with Waterford. So it could be a bit of a rebuilding job for John Caulfield next year, despite all the success.
I think so. I mean, you know, if I hark back to 2005 when we won the league that year, you know, it was a superb team and a lot of players went on to create individual kind of careers themselves. But That was just kind of the beginning of the end in one sense, like for that team and for the trajectory of the club. Whereas now we're going in a different direction totally. So even though there will be players leave, you can only imagine the club will go from strength to strength. Yeah, I'd be surprised if Dooley hung around. I think he had offers last year. I'd say he'd want to, you know, have a punt playing abroad. I'd be surprised if Bulger stayed purely because he's such a good quality player and, you know, he's been on the bench for so long. Delaney will go. There's certainly two centre halves that are needed, two strikers, possibly right back. But I think we'll keep the core of the side together. I think it's very normal for the league that, you know, when teams do well, their squads get filleted. You know, I mean, there'll be a lot of scouts at the match on Sunday. There'll be eyeing players on both sides. You know, I mean, Dundalk are in the same position. But I think the signing of Sadler, for example, is during the season was putting the building blocks in place for next year. And signing guys on longer term contracts, which is starting to happen more and more, would protect, you know, and bring a bit of stability and sustainability to the squads, you know. So yeah. I'm sure Coffey he'll be all. He's recruited very well in the last few years, and I expect him to do the same this year.
Yeah, well, it's going to be very important because obviously you're going to be looking at Champions League qualifiers next year, and, you know, I can't see it being a success if you're changing so much of the squad, but I know. You're pretty hopeful of keeping it together, and Caulfield was saying that he's looking abroad for a striker.
Yeah, he is I mean, there's not many options in the League of Ireland. I mean, we're heavily linked with Ronan Murray, and you know, he's probably got a lot of clubs after him. I mean, there's not a lot of guys who are, you know, in that bracket. You know, I think Coffey put a lot of effort into trying to replace Maguire during the season, but you know, links with guys like Owen Stokes and Mikey Glennon. But I mean, I don't think the players were there. I can understand that he wants to look further afield. I mean, you know, the club is in a good position. It can offer good contracts now, and they need to, you know, they need to bring in high quality players like to push on next year, really.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask you about Turner's Cross, and it's important to have the stadium right for those European matches. How's any news on the repairs to the cross?
No, I haven't heard anything yet. I mean, it's the Munster FA or the landlord, so to speak. So you'd hope that that would be something that'd be done in the coming months. I wouldn't anticipate a problem in that end. I mean, you know, they've had a few sellouts, but the European capacity is generally reduced, right? Because there's, you know, there's less people able to stand around the fringes. But I don't, like, they'll repair the stand, sure, but there's not going to be any other, you know, upgrades to the stadium, really, at this stage, you know.
And just tying on the cup final on Sunday, could you give us a predicted Cork lineup? Because myself and John have been debating it here, and we can't seem to just nail down a starting 11 for Cork, whereas Dundalk's team almost seems to pick itself by one or two players who are in good form at the moment, like Jamie McGrath.
Sure. I think Caulfield will stick to his general kind of 11, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if Gahan plays in the right wing and that he keeps Sadler on the bench. That would be with an eye on, you know, on Cahan kind of tucking into midfield, helping with keeping possession and also kind of covering the right full. I think he'll look to have Sadler on the bench maybe to come on with 20 minutes to go, because I think Coffey will be pragmatic. He'll be looking at this thinking, fair chance going to go to extra time. You know, having an impact player like Sadler to play the last 20 and, you know, 30 minutes of injury or extra time could be a game changer. But I think Cahan, Sadler is the only kind of one up in the air, really.
I have to say, I'd be surprised if that was the case, leaving Sadler on the bench. He's, for me, one of the best wide players in the league, and we've seen a stunning goal against that final game. But we just had Declan Fabio O'Brien on the show, and he actually predicted a 3-0 win for Dundalk, so he's not expecting it to be a tight game. He thinks it'll be a much more open final than we've seen in recent years, so surely that would be a very dangerous approach for John Coffey to leave his best player on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, Sadler's definitely, he's been very good. I think he's got 7 and something like 22 games since he's joined. But I think we won't see the best until next year. But I just think that Coffey will, like, the last 2 years has gone to extra time, and both matches, both teams were out on their feet, you know. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Dundalk did the same thing with Connolly. Seeing, you know, having an impact player off the bench could really change the game, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect Connolly to start.
These games have been tight, you know.
He hasn't started any of the big games, really, any of the European games. I think that's because he tends to give the ball away a lot more than the likes of a McGrath or a Benson or any player like that. So I wouldn't expect him to start. Ty, just the importance of winning the cup. We've seen last season Maguire's goal. It almost seemed to be a mentality change for Cork City. Obviously, Cork have the title in their hands this season going into the final, but I'm sure they're eager to do the double. As you said, it's never been done before. But just in terms of next season, if they could succeed in doing the double, it'd be a huge mentality boost for Cork City over Dundalk.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, I think last year, the victory away to Dundalk in Oriel early on in the year in April was a huge thing psychologically for the team. It was a fantastic victory. And then obviously the cup final, that kind of prepared the team mentally, you know, to take, you know, to win again later in the season in Turner's Cross. But, you know, Maguire's goal to win the cup had such a kind of a transformative impact. You know, it can convince a few players like himself to stay on for this year. It gave the team, I think, the belief that they could go for the league this year. I think it's going to be a huge one. I think the motivation won't be lacking. I think both teams are going to be going for it. Like, it's the last game of the season. All holds, you know, no holds barred, like.
Yeah, you're a well-known Ireland supporter on social media, Tig. So in 30 seconds, can you give us a prediction for Ireland's game against Denmark over two legs and the cup final on Sunday? Go.
God.
No pressure.
Ireland's game, I think Myler being out is a huge blow for us, you know. Yeah. Eriksen's obviously the danger man. Closing down space around him is going to be absolutely key. McCarthy sounds like he's not going to make it either, so it's Glenn Whelan we have. And whether he'll need to stick Arthur in with him to kind of protect. I think he'll go for nil all away from home and 1-0 for us at home. Game on Sunday, you know, Dundalk are absolutely the form team. City's form has been poor the last third of the league. But, you know, this is a one-off game. I think the games between Dundalk and Cork City the last 2 years has been 9 of them. City have won 7, Dundalk won 1 and 1 draw. I think every time the victor has been the team that has brought the most intensity to the game. Like Dundalk had it, in fairness to them, in the pivotal match last year in Oriel. They won the right to play, you know, and to perform. But in the other games, they haven't been able to get to the pace of the game. I think the biggest kind of telling point would be Conor McCormack on McElhenney. You know, McElhenney hasn't performed in the games against Cork City. He hasn't found space. If McCormack can keep him quiet, I think Cork City will win. If he can't, I think Dundalk might do it.
Yeah, and I think I could get any Ireland fan on the show and they always seem to predict 1-0. So that's where we're going to leave it tight. Thanks very much for joining us. You were the final guest on Between the Stripes LOI podcast for 2017. So we'd really appreciate it and enjoy the final on Sunday.
No, that's all the best.
Thanks very much, Tyke.
Cheers now.
So, John, this is the moment I've been dreading since we started out this season. It's the end of the show. It's the end of the final show for 2017. But what a roller coaster it's been since we started out. I don't think anyone could have imagined the success we'd have. The high point for me, been ranked in the top 23 in the sports category in the iTunes podcast just a couple of weeks ago. And then obviously last week, nearly just shy of 1,000 listeners, which is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, Kieran, I couldn't predict that when we first started that we would get anything like that. I'm just amazed. And I'd just like to thank all our listeners out there who've made it possible and everybody who's subscribed to us. And of course, all the people that have come on to be interviewed. The likes of Julian from Galway has been on a few times and there's so many others to thank, so thanks very much, everybody.
Yeah, just a couple of thank yous to round us off. Obviously, massive thanks to Pádraig Lochrí, giving us the use of the facilities here in Drumlish to record. So very, very grateful for that, and thanks very much. Cameron, who does the posters for our show, absolutely superb every time. Thanks very much. And obviously, thanks to all our guests, as John said. And a thanks to John himself, who I managed to twist his arm and get him involved this season, and he's been a fantastic co-host, so I want to thank him very much for that. And as he said, thanks to all the listeners, everyone subscribing. But this isn't goodbye, folks. There will be a Christmas special, so keep an eye on our Facebook and Twitter for that. And obviously we'll be back again next season, bigger and better than ever, and there's going to be a new website and everything, so much to look forward to. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you again soon.
Don't forget, subscribe on iTunes or alternatively follow us on Audioboom, Mixcloud, Pocket Casts or Podcast Republic and never miss an episode. See you next week.